Bonjour à toutes et à tous, je suis Myriam Septi, fondatrice et rédactrice en chef du magazine Diptyque. Depuis Casablanca, Diptyque explore l'art contemporain d'Afrique, du monde arabe et de leur diaspora, à travers une revue trimestrielle, une édition digitale, une newsletter hebdomadaire et un compte Instagram qui prend au quotidien le pouls des scènes artistiques du Sud. Autour de moi, une équipe d'auteurs, de critiques et de journalistes parcourt les foires, les ateliers, les musées, les biennales, les résidences. De Dakar à Marrakech, de Londres à Dubaï, de Lagos à Venise, ils rapportent des histoires multiples, sensibles et connectées. Avec le podcast Diptyque, nous prenons le temps d'écouter les personnalités, artistes, curateurs, collectionneurs, galeristes ou penseurs qui animent ces scènes artistiques. Ensemble, nous parlons bien sûr esthétique, processus de création. Nous parlons aussi d'engagement, de transmission et de circulation. Souvent aussi, nous abordons les difficultés à faire exister ces projets ambitieux dans les contextes socio-économiques de nos pays. Dans ce podcast, comme dans tous les projets éditoriaux de Diptyque, nous travaillons à la construction de nouveaux récits des Suds, des récits où les voix africaines et arabes dialoguent avec le monde. Dans chaque épisode de cette série, j'ouvre un espace de conversation libre, sans filtre, où la pensée se tisse avec le réel. J'établis toujours une trame de conversation, mais que je laisse volontiers déborder pour faire advenir quelque chose d'inédit. Ce podcast est réalisé avec le soutien de l'Université Mohamed VI Polytechnique, une université marocaine d'avant-garde, dédiée au développement de solutions innovantes pour répondre aux défis de l'Afrique et aux enjeux mondiaux. Bienvenue dans le podcast Diptyque. My guest today bridges two spheres that rarely meet, art collecting and social impact. Samir Al-Hashiwi is Managing Director of Education for All Morocco, a charity empowering girls from rural areas to access education facility. She's also a passionate collector with a deep interest in Moroccan and international contemporary art. Between Morocco and the UK, Samira weaves together creativity and purpose. And that's exactly what we're going to discuss today. Samira, welcome in the Diptyque podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. It's an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, me too. To begin this discussion, I would like you to tell us a little bit more about your life. How you were raised between two cultures, the Netherlands and Morocco? How did that shape your sense of identity and the way you look at the world today?
Yes, indeed. I've always been immersed between not just two countries, but recently three to four even. Second generation immigrant, born and raised in the Netherlands. Both Moroccan parents, and I've always had quite a traditional Moroccan upbringing. My parents always spoke Moroccan at home, so my Darija is strong, although I can't read and write Arabic. At the age of 23, post-graduating, I found myself moving to the city of London. I got a job in the finance industry and have been here ever since, so that's over 20 years now. With three children that are born and raised in the UK, they're very much Londoners, not necessarily English, but definitely Londoners. And currently find myself working in Morocco, I would like to say part-time, because I spend about 2 weeks a month at the moment in Morocco. Mm. So I'm very much a person that finds herself with her feet and her roots sort of spread over two continents, three countries, and it's always been an interesting balance to sort of belong somewhere. That sense of belonging, the sense of your home and your finding a home base.
Yes. Could you tell us what pushed you to move from investment banking to social impact?
Yes, absolutely. I've worked in investment banking for many years and at some point moved into the fintech industry. But I reached a point in my life when I had my third child, and it was 2019, that it was time to go back to work post-pregnancy, and I just couldn't find the energy to do it, to go back into the corporate world and sit at a desk and do relatively meaningless work. And the sole purpose was indeed, you know, adding to sort of that rat race in the city, in the capital, capitalistic world. I have always been interested in giving back because of my personal background, and I'll come to that in a second. But I have known Education for All since 2011. Me and my family were donors from 2011, and when I decided in 2019 not to go back into the financial industry, I became more involved with the charity and eventually joined the board. And last year, January, was asked to step in when the CEO left. And you can imagine it didn't take me long to decide that was indeed what I wanted to do. And I have to say, ever since, I realized that I found my purpose. Yeah. Never regretted it ever since.
So now we're at Somerset House during 154 Art Fair. And so I would like to talk a little bit about what you collect, about your interest in contemporary art. Could you tell us how it all began? So I've been told that you have a collection between Moroccan contemporary art and international, maybe in the Netherlands. Can you tell us a little bit what you bought first? What were your interests at first? And now what are your interests?
Yes, absolutely. So I think my first connection with art wasn't one that I grew up with. My parents weren't necessarily into art. Again, 2019 was definitely a turning point in my life because I didn't go back into the city. I started visiting the Royal Academy. And I think the Royal Academy is a phenomenal institution because it's so different from any other sort of museum type of organization. And started slowly, you know, they have the schools talking to artists, trying to understand what drives an artist and looking at artwork from a completely different perspective. My very first Moroccan art piece I bought was actually here. I met the artist Hassan Hajjaj.
Oh, yes.
And it wasn't a piece that I saw here, but I went to his atelier in Shoreditch.
Okay.
And he started telling me his story, and it was very similar to my story. Again, all the struggles and the backgrounds and the obstacles, but also the beautiful things that we as diaspora have to deal with. It very much resonated. He's from Larache. My parents actually had a place in Larache, so I spent a lot of summers there. There was a connection, and I think his artwork is, you know, besides the fact that it's really, really cool, it's fun, it's colorful, you know, the fashion, etc. What we all see, it's very pop indeed. It's also extremely controlled and very well framed, and he's extremely disciplined in he takes the time to think it through. It's not just a spontaneous set.
No, it's not random at all.
At all. And I think the voice that he gives Moroccan and African artists on a global scale, thanks to his sort of reputation and awareness, it really is interesting because it's so far away from the stereotypical that we know and that we hear too often about, unfortunately. So he was one of the first ones I bought. And then that was followed very quickly by a piece I bought from Safa Erwas.
Yeah.
Because the Royal Academy organized a patrons tour to the African Art Fair in Marrakesh. And it was a phenomenal, diverse group of interested collectors, relatively young collectors. And we had so, besides the fact that we had so much fun, I bought two beautiful pieces of Safa Erwas. And I think she's phenomenal.
Did you have the chance to meet her and discuss?
Not yet. No, she wasn't there at the time, but I did do my research. Yeah. So I feel like I know pieces of her. I'd love to meet her at some point.
She's really, she's one of the most important artists at the moment from Tétouan.
Yeah.
And she has been really with her fellow artist, Younes Rahmoun, with whom she shared a studio in the 90s. They have a shared experience of how you become an international contemporary artist, but very much rooted into the Moroccan scene. She's really a huge artist. I hope you have the chance to meet her.
I hope so. Yeah. Value an introduction. Yeah. Feel free to.
Oh, but yes, I will do it, of course.
Feel free to connect us. Yeah, yeah, I'd love to go by, yes.
Definitely, I will.
No, I love what she does. And you know, with the pieces I bought are with the needles, the needlework, and you know, beautiful use of thread. And there is this fluid shapes. And funnily enough, I know it might be completely unrelatable, but I spend quite a bit of time now in Rabat for one of the programs that we've launched there. Every time I drive past the Zaha Hadid new theater,
that we hope will be soon launched.
Yeah, exactly. Fingers crossed. Yes, it's been it's a work in progress, I understand. Wouldn't it be wonderful to visit that?
Yeah.
But that work that I have from South Africa, it reminds me of that because it has quite some architectural features that sort of collide. And every time you look at it, you see something different. Whenever the light falls in a different, you know, you spot something else. And
yeah, it's an installation that you have, yes, not just a 2D. It's a piece, it's a 3D piece.
It's 3D, or? Yes, yeah, yeah. It's 3D, yes.
And how did you display it in your room?
I did hang it on a wall.
Yeah.
For a simple reason, I couldn't find a space to put it on. Like, it needs specific pedestals, and you know, we live in a London townhouse.
Yeah.
So space is kind of rare. But yeah, this way it's perfect. And every time you walk past it, you see, like I say, you know, you see something else. And that's what art means to me as well.
Absolutely. It's very interesting to listen to you, how you choose artists and how you feel what's going on in their work, for Hassan Hajjaj, obviously, and also for Safa Rouaz. So what else do you have in the Moroccan part of your collection?
I have a piece that I adore by Nabil El Makhloufi.
Oh, yes.
He's currently exhibiting, I saw,
in Casablanca.
Casablanca. Yeah.
I spoke to him last week.
Oh, really?
Had a very interesting interview with him. And he was saying in the interview that for him, painting is intrinsically, intrinsically, we say in French, speaking about his identity and his Moroccan roots, he can't produce any images of anything else but Morocco. This will be always Moroccan crowds, and we recognize them. For him, painting is looking for his identity, and the painting is getting more and more. It's really, really fabulous, fabulous painting. So what, do you have a crowd?
It's funny that you say that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I have a crowd. It's a crowd, and it's suspended.
Mm.
They're not necessarily, I find there are crowds, but they're not always sort of crowded together. Yeah. They're always sort of spread out. Although there's a lot of emptiness in his paintings for you to sort of fill that void. But it's a group of people, suspended. You know, they're neither here nor there. They're not present or absent. They are, you know, they're coming and going. And
floating,
that's very much so. I recognize what you say about him. It's that feeling of he's desperately looking to belong.
Yeah.
But he feels that either, you know, you're drowning or, you know, you can't root yourself because, you know, they're all torsos sort of sticking out of water or air or however you want to fill that void. And that's very much how I've been feeling for you know, a very big part of my life. Because in Holland, you know, he's from Germany, but in Holland, I'm not Dutch, and I've never felt like that I 100% belonged like one of those. And in Morocco, I'm not Moroccan, because although I feel Moroccan whenever I'm there, and I think, I think I'm a little bit different. Although I desperately try to belong, and you know, especially with the work that I do now in particular, it means so much to me. But you always have that, you're sort of always suspended. And you know, then I have London, where you know, I've been living for over 20 years, and my kids,
everyone here comes from another place.
Yes, where it's a melting pot. So you're always they say home is where your heart is, and in my case, my heart is sort of, you know, broken up in multiple pieces, and there's a piece everywhere.
Yeah. We explore these themes very much in Diptyque magazine. Last year, we made a special issue to fit with the Festival du Livre in Paris about artists from diaspora. It was called Al Mahjar, which means Hijra, in the fact that you are away from home. And we tried to map all the Moroccan artists around the world. It was quite a beautiful issue. I will give you one, if I can find one, but otherwise, and I'm sure you will find, there is obviously Nabil Makhloufi and lots of them, all the artists, the Moroccan artists who have a diasporic experience.
Yeah.
And what about the Dutch part of the collection?
Oh gosh, so a very famous piece that we have is a Corneille, mm-hmm. one of the most famous Dutch cobra artists. I mean, very fun, very colorful, very playful, very naughty. You know, there's a lot of sexual nuances, of course, in it. Never boring. It's you know, it hangs very central in our dining room, but it's fantastic.
You know that there has been a Moroccan artist from the 60s, Gharbawi, who has a whole period of his work that's called Cobra period, and there have been exhibitions about Cobra, the influence of Cobra in Moroccan modernism. And it would be great to to feature this in your collection.
Yeah, exactly. Well, one of my favorite Moroccan cobra artists is Shaibia.
Oh, but yes.
I think she's phenomenal in her background, and what she has achieved is just fantastic. I know she spent some time in Holland as well, back in the days.
Yeah, when you listen to her interviews, it's great. She, at some point, I heard an interview when she says, Chef Oni, and it's absolutely incredible. She laughs about herself pretending to be an artist.
Yeah.
And it's so emotional. When I hear this part of the interview, I really think that we find the exact focal point of her inner personality. And she laughs about herself. She was never taking herself very seriously. But the art talks about...
Yeah, I think, in my opinion, she's one of the greatest artists Morocco has produced. And definitely one of the greatest female artists Morocco has ever produced.
Yeah, she has a real cult. There is a Shaibia cult in Morocco among collectors. And each time there's an important piece on sale, it goes,
flies.
Yeah, it flies.
Not surprised. I've seen her collection in the Rabat... Museum, and
it's
the ambassador here in London has a beautiful piece in the residency. It's on my list.
Absolutely. So talking about art, I know that you're very close to Vanessa Brunson that we featured in this issue I gave you. There is a whole interview of Vanessa of the way she founded the Marrakech Biennale that doesn't exist, unfortunately, and she we choose this moment because she sold her Ria Delphine, and we wanted to tell the story of these two decades being into art, Ria Delphine being the headquarter of a new approach of contemporary art, and the interview is really really good.
Obviously.
So I read that you recently participated in an auction involved Vanessa. For education, could you tell us a little bit about this?
Yes, so Vanessa has been a fantastic supporter of our organization for a while, and we collaborate with the Eve Branson Foundation from time to time as well. She reached out to me. We were talking, and she said, "Listen, Samir, if you want to do something, my house is your house, mi casa, su casa." So I thought, wouldn't it be great to organize an event in her stunning place here in Bayswater, and invite loyal donors, existing donors, new donors, supporters and friends of the organization there for a fun night and have an auction in the meantime. So this is where the artwork comes in. There have been fantastic supporters. Ghislaine Exene,
yes,
whose work I also absolutely adore. gave us a painting for the auction. And
they were essentially Moroccan paintings in the auction?
Yes, there were. We had three, one from Ghislain and two from Youssef Dweeb.
Yes.
Super generous. First time we had Ghislain, second mm-hmm. time we had Youssef. In the past, we've also had works from Lela Seydi and Hassan Hajjaj. This time we didn't necessarily ask them. We had a lot of hotels. So I thought also we need to sort of balance it out a little bit. But yes, the artwork is...
Lela Seydi is really a huge artist.
I know.
I think it's an amazing work. This was the first portfolio we published in 2009, in the first issue of Diptyque when we launched the magazine. And there was this portfolio of Lela Seydi. It was for all of us the first time we saw her. And then, it was a crazy work to see at this moment. Everyone was wondering, is it digital? Does she work on images? Really, and until now, because I have seen so many artists in 2009 that have disappeared or lost a little bit of relevancy in the time. And Lela Seydi, I saw her show last year in Darcy Said in Marrakesh.
Yeah.
And the combination of her, it's a photography installation. It's more than just photography, it's performance. With the zelige of the museum, it was a stunning effect, really something really that Morocco can produce in interesting.
No, it's. I've seen it. I've been two or three times because every time I was there and I had different friends over, I insisted they had to see it.
Yeah, it was worth the visit, really.
Yeah, no, I think she's phenomenal. I think she, Shaibia, and Amina Egzne, in my opinion, are three sort of, you know, the top that Morocco has produced so far.
Amina is going to represent Morocco at the Venice Biennale.
Yeah,
I'm very happy. This is for us, this is for Morocco a huge moment, a real achievement. Yeah. And yes, we're going to cover this, of course, with all our heart and brain.
No, we have, but listen, we have to support it as well. If people, especially, you know, you and your reputation, your awareness, your scale of PR with the magazine, if people like you don't support something like that, then, you know, Morocco is going to have a really hard time.
Yeah,
we have to stand behind it. Yeah. And
for the first time, we really feel that the whole energy is going towards this achievement of having a Moroccan booth, a Moroccan representation in national pavilions in Venice. It's very important to do it with the pair of women who are stunning, Mariam Berrada and Amina Egzne, who are going to be fantastic, I'm sure. I mean, the team works. Yeah. We know it works, so it's going to be...
Great. And isn't it phenomenal that it's women?
Yeah. Yeah.
And not, again, men? Yes, I think, you know, that's, you know, setting a statement. That's what we try to work on with Education for All as well.
So let's jump to this subject.
Women first and women supporting women. Education for All. It's an organization that started in 2007. Was actually founded by a Britishman and a Dutch couple because they realized when they were visiting the mountain areas, the Atlas Mountains outside Marrakesh, that during school days, there were too many girls walking around, simply not in school. And the reason was very, you know, very, very easy, transparent. They were living too remote and there were no schools nearby for them to go to. There are government Dar Talibas, but the parents didn't necessarily want their girls to go there. Slightly more careful on the girls than on the boys, as we understand from a cultural perspective.
There's also the problem of they're supposed to be, collecting water. This is their very first.
Exactly.
And there is also the problem, sorry to be so basic and prosaic, but very often they don't let them go because there isn't facilities, there isn't restrooms.
Yeah, exactly.
And sometimes it's as idiot as this. This is why they very often don't go to school.
No, exactly. Yeah. No hygiene facilities. Yeah. So, you know, when a girl needs to go in public, you don't want that. And also when she has her period again.
Yeah.
You know, it's just something very simple. They learned to read and write locally in a small... mosque room, and one of the people in the village that could read and write would teach them, but at the age of 12, that sort of stopped, and they would get married relatively young. So the organization rented an apartment. It was a trial for 10 girls. It was a great success. Long story short, it grew out to 6 boarding houses with 250 girls. Now, since I took over right after the earthquake, we grew the organization and added 4 more boarding houses to that. So we now have about 450 girls full-time care with us in boarding houses for 12 to 18, and also from 18 to 22. And we have education center for girls with Down syndrome. And then we have a program in Rabat. That's our first urban program. The rest are all rural. In Rabat, we're cooperating with a local orphanage where we support girls that are really into marginality from very vulnerable backgrounds. We support them through their BAC 1 and BAC 2 years and help them graduate from their baccalaureate and then support them going into university. That was such a success, the first trial that we had last year, that we've grown it now, and it's nearly 40 girls in that program. So slowly, bit by bit, we're sort of expanding our national presence in the country. And my sort of dream is to increase from this year. We started with 550 girls full-time in our programs, including the Down syndrome program and the Rabat program, where we're going to 1,000 girls within the next 1 to 2 years.
Fantastic.
So it's rather ambitious, but considering, I'm sure you've, exactly what's going on being from Casablanca.
Yeah.
There is a huge gap in facilities and provision, particularly to those disadvantaged, handicapped or vulnerable. And we're trying to sort of do our best and play a part into plugging that gap.
I would like to know, in your experience, how can art and education both serve as tool of liberation? Do you see education for girls, but for boys, of course, as well? How does it work in your experience?
Gosh, I think in different ways. Do you mean art in a specific way, and generally?
In generally, of course, but also education.
I think artists have a voice. Artists have the freedom of expression that I think is a very valuable tool. So when it comes to expressing issues or expressing emotions or expressing a current state of affairs, artists have a certain power that the press or people in general don't necessarily have. So from that perspective, they can make statements. I think that's one thing. They can be the voice of the people. But also from another, from a completely different angle, artists can support, like I said, through philanthropy. We've had artists giving us works, and that way through auctions, etc., supporting local charities or local organizations that are trying their best to sort of make ends meet to run certain programs. And it doesn't have to be a large organization like ours. It can be smaller local programs. That's very powerful. We all know La Colombe d'Or.
Yeah.
How that sort of was established. It was the power of the artists.
Yeah.
You give and take. They gave some, they got something in return. That's something that where the art world, I think, can be strong in, but also through education. I think for those vulnerable and disadvantaged youth, being able to express or to learn how to express yourself through art is a very, tool that allows you to release and give, release emotions in a way that you maybe never had the luxury to do or were given that opportunity. So for artists to work with youth and actually support them in teaching them how to express themselves, so running maybe local programs or volunteering and supporting local education centers or schools, that could be a beautiful exchange. Yeah.
But even in Morocco, we lack art schools. There is INBA, Institut National des Beaux-Arts, and an artist like Safar Rouaz comes from INBA. But there are not so many art schools, and very often you see that artists who go to Tétouan come from really remote and far away places like the south of Morocco, and they candidate for INBA, but it would be fantastic that there are more art schools in Morocco, all over Morocco. That was a program of INBA, but I don't know where they have been until now. Well, thank you very much, Samira, for this interesting. And I hope we can share some actualities of your nonprofit in Morocco during maybe 154 Marrakech. If there's another auction during 154, if there are any actuality.
Well, definitely.
And if someday you make an exhibition of your collection, we'll be there to cover.
I'd love to invite you. Absolutely. It would be a pleasure.
Thank you,
Miriam.
Thank you.